Yes?
Mr. Drew Pearson on 9-0.
Tell him I have a bunch of folks with me, but that you're going to put me through, but he'll have to do most of the talking.
Thank you. Mr. Pearson?
Yeah?
He has a lot of folks with him. We're going to put you through, but you might be expected to do most of the talking, and he'll just do the listening, all right? Thank you, just a moment.
I can, I don't have to talk to him now, but is it better? Hello?
Yes, sir.
All right. Would it be better for me to call back later?
Let me check, just a moment.
Yes?
He asked if it'd be better for him to call back later.
Tell him I've got him all day long. Just tell him no. Tell him I've got Security Council right after this. Got the British Foreign Minister and others and the leadership. But this is just the worst day of the year for me. And everybody has to do it right now. And I'll be on in just a minute.
Thank you. Mr. Pearson?
Yeah.
He says he can't think of any time. The day looks pretty rough. So if you'll just hold on, he'll be right with you.
All right.
Thank you.
Hello.
Chief?
Yes?
Drew.
Hi, Drew. How are you?
I know you can't talk there. The governor's told me that you were terrific last night. You got a big vote from everybody. Say, I'm leaving this afternoon. Louie and I are going over to Russia and probably Hungary and Budapest or Poland. And newspaper trip. But I'm writing a book on Khrushchev, and I don't know whether I'll see him or not. But I just thought I'd check in with you. I was trying to figure out if I could, didn't want to muddy any waters or that you, this very delicate operation that you've got going, and I know how difficult it is, and I know what you're trying to do.
I'll tell you what I told them last night, and it wasn't on the record, and I wouldn't want this to be on the record, but I think that if you could use it discreetly, I think it would be, I think it might be helpful to you.
Yeah, all right.
I said that Eisenhower went in there in 54, and he pledged those people that he would help them.
Yeah.
The Congress came along and ratified that in 55 by a vote of 82-1, which said that when any country in that area is attacked or faced with aggression, that we'll come to their rescue. That was the CETO Treaty, and there's only one person that voted against it, 82-1 in the Senate. That was before I became president, and that's Eisenhower's commitment. He had hundreds of people in there. Kennedy came along. He studied it. He reaffirmed the commitment, although he had to keep the treaty, just like a treaty. If we don't have it there, we don't have it Berlin, we don't have it any place. It's not worth a dime. And the first to denounce it would be the Russians if we broke the test ban, or the French if we, de Gaulle would be right down our neck if we broke any treaties. And besides, the 100 little countries like Greece and Turkey looked at us in the Truman Doctrine that are watching to see if we can help hold this little country from aggressors, then maybe they got a hope. If we can't hold them, why then they'll all be gobbled up as Hitler gobbled up the Low Countries. And we don't want to have another Munich, and I don't want to be another Chamberlain. So I came in and said, Taft said that he wouldn't disagree with Roosevelt what he's doing in Korea, but he did it the wrong way, that he ought to be in on the takeoffs if he's going to be in on the landings, and Congress ought to be asked for its expression. So I went to Congress and said, you give me your views. And the Congress in August of last year passed a resolution saying that I should protect against all aggressors and use all the power that's necessary and all the power of the United States forces. So I read them that. Now, there are people that want us to pull out. Morse is one, and others say, well, you can have a military solution and this and that. We have to analyze that. Let's put it under a microscope. I got a treaty, 82 to 1. I got a resolution, 502 to 2. And that resolution says that the Congress approves and supports the determination of the President to take all necessary measures to repel any armed attack and to prevent further aggression. And the United States is prepared to take all necessary steps as the President determined, including the use of all armed forces necessary to assist any member or protocol state of the Southeast Asia Defense Treaty. So Congress did that in August. They did it in 55, 82 to 1. They did it in August this year, 502 to 2. So I don't much believe I can break her commitment. I don't bleach, I can walk out. I think if it did, they'd take Thailand. I think they'd take Cambodia. I think they'd take Burma. I think they'd take Indonesia. I think they'd take India. I think they'd come right back and take the Philippines, and I think we'd be home. And I think I'd be another Chamberlain, and I think we'd have another Munich, and I think aggressors feed on blood, and so forth. So that's number one. I'm not coming home. Now, they may get another president, but I'm not going to pull out. Now, the second thing is negotiation. That's the second course. Negotiation, I had said in every State of the Union, in 40 different speeches, I'll go anywhere. I'll do anything. I'll see anybody that I can do and see in an honorable way to promote peace at any time. Now, that didn't just say the Russians. That didn't just say the British. That didn't just say the French. That said anybody, anywhere, at any time that offers any hope of peace. Okay, now let's see whether I need to go to Hanoi or not. Let's see whether I need to go to Peiping or not. My last intelligence from Hanoi, well, first I'll say from Peiping, it sums up pretty well, and this is a literal quotation. Mao Zedong says that Emperor Johnson must know that he cannot win at the conference table what he has lost on the battlefield. Now, that's so far, that's pretty strong for China. Sure. And they denounced Russia this morning, yesterday morning, for what they had done, not coming in and raising more hell themselves. So Hanoi, I got a most recent report, says that they think that the South is crumbling, that they will not talk negotiation. They will not have any consideration to it until we pull back to San Francisco, until we get out, until they take over South Vietnam, and they'd be glad to talk. Now, I don't know how you can negotiate when there's nobody wants to negotiate. We encourage the Russians and the British without weakening our hand, without changing our government, and without letting the South Vietnamese think we're running out. We did everything we could to encourage them to see what track they could keep open. But they didn't get very far. We have even encouraged the French, who talk big about negotiation, and every time they say, I say, how, they go in and say, well, we're sorry, but the time's not right. You got to be more militarily strong, more military power. So I can't find anybody to negotiate with, and if I negotiate some, I have no reason to believe it'd be any better or stronger than 54 or 62, and they don't keep those, and I don't know how to make it self-enforcing, so it doesn't look to me, unless they leave the people alone, and if they keep spreading aggression, I don't think I can run, and I think I'm committed to defend them. And if they won't negotiate with me, and they say they won't negotiate, and I can't say that I won't negotiate and have them turn me down, it would leave the world in much worse shape. Every negotiation this country's ever had has been a preliminary understanding ahead of time, sure, that there was some hope of something coming out of it. So the third thing is LeMay viewpoint. I can take my bombs, and I can take my nuclear weapons, as Barry says, and I can defoliate, and I can clear out that brush where I can see anybody coming down that line. And I can wipe out Hanoi, and I can wipe out Peiping, and I can wipe out a good deal of their 33 divisions that'd be coming down there. But I think that would start World War III, and I think I'd have 700-800 million, and I'd have a land war in Asia, and I think I'd have sent 300,000 or 400,000 men there. So what I have done, when they have come across the line with their bomb and dropped them in American compound, One or two didn't explode. I picked them up and put one or two hours with them and taken them back where they left that morning to their own compound and dropped them in theirs. They killed a good deal more people than we did. I haven't bombed any cities. I haven't killed any women and children. I have said I would be appropriate and fitting and measured. And I'm being just as measured as I know how. I don't get in vicinity of their aircraft. I don't get in vicinity of their cities. I don't kill their women and children. The people in South Vietnam forces do have some tear gas and nausea bombs. They got them from the French back before they got out of there. They got some from us. Every police chief in the United States has them. Every riot unit we have in the Army has them. When you start riding and tagging over the embassy and coming in, rather than shooting people, you give them something that'll upset the stomach or make them, their eyes blink. And hell, they used them in Selma a week ago. Now, I didn't send them out there. They were out there long before I came. I never knew it. I never heard of it. But all this big propaganda they make about gas, it's not poison gas. It's not war gas. It's the same kind of gas Chief Murray's got right here. If the Negroes started moving in the White House and they told them to stop. And it's the same kind. It's used by all riot units and used by Saigon police and used by military police every place. And as a matter of fact, we got them down there right now in case the state troopers and the rest of them take in on us in Alabama. There's yeah. Nothing new about that. But they play it up. First thing, a damn newspaper man writes a lie.
Yeah.
He said, I understand you got mustard gas out here. And they said, no, we haven't. Well, tell us the truth. Tell us the truth. The only thing we know anything about is this non-lethal gas, this tear gas. Then he writes a story that they say it's non-lethal, but it could make a man's eyes water and it could make him sick. Well, of course it does. That's a whole lot preferable when the Viet Cong come in and about to blow up the embassy.
Sure.
We haven't used it. But when Kennedy didn't have it in Jackson, Mississippi, they just raised uncharted hell and he had to move in and fly them in day and night so they could protect our people if we needed to. And that's the best way anybody knows, any police squad, to, when the mob gets in action, 100,000 people coming at you, turn it loose. Now, they have used it once or twice in South Vietnam. I don't know how many times. I never heard of it till last night when I got back. But they're doing everything. This week, it's dropping bombs. The next week, it's poor equipment. The week before, it's inadequate planes. The next week, it's gas. And these boys, the propagandists and the communists, are working pretty full string, and they keep us defending all the time, fighting with their own people, trying to explain that we're not warmongers, trying to explain to the Goldwaters and to the Nixons and even to the Lodges and to Rockefeller why we're not dropping bombs up there and why we're not getting closer in to their industrial targets. And I have to explain that to them and show them that doesn't do any good. You just kill a bunch of women and children, and let's try to deter them. Let's try to prevail on them. Let's do like I do with my daughter Lucy. Let's try to reason with them. Let's be patient. Let's follow what old Ag Hammarskjöld said just before he died. The qualities peace requires are just those which I feel we all must have today. Perseverance and patience. A firm grip on realities, careful but imaginative planning, a clear awareness of the dangers, but also the fact that fate is what we make it. Now, that's what I'm trying to do. So I can't run out. I've got nobody to negotiate with. I don't want to bomb their cities and their towns, and I'm trying to convince them by putting off a pop gun or a firecracker or anything I can to please quit coming in.
Sure.
And that's that simple. And I have said time and time and time again, I repeat to you now, I'll do anything that's honorable. I'll go anywhere. I'll see anybody. I'll make any sacrifice to keep people from being killed. Just like I didn't want to go into Montgomery and Selma. I did everything a human could to avoid it. He came up here and I spent 3 hours with him. But when all said and done, he said it.